not hearing anything. That ain't good. Alrighty then. Play it myself.
Out here in the perimeter, there are no stars. Out here, we is stone, immaculate.
Now listen to this. I'll tell you about the heartache. I'll tell you about the heartache and the
loss of God.
I'll tell you about the hopeless night, the meager food, the soul forgot. I'll tell you about the maiden with wrought iron soul.
And welcome to another dilapidated edition of Somatime, as the theme song is Slow Out the Chute. The unexplainable glitches of the free radio here in internet land. I'm your host, Dr. Mark Filippi, and tonight we're going to be taking a little walk on the wild side, going deeper into this brain thing. I'm on this brain thread for like the last month. And, you know, we've done just about every type of angle you could take at this thing. But tonight we're going to be going actually kind of full circle in a way, as we kind of mesh all the different approaches with our guest, Dr. Sung Lee from BR Consulting, who will be joining us forthwith in a couple of minutes. But first, news all over the map, all over the land. I don't even know where to begin. You got phony elections in Iran. You got all kinds of things. But, of course, the number one thing on this show is the swine friend, which has now progressed to be our pal, the pandemic. And there's a little a website called flutracker.rizalabs.com. Maybe I'll post it somewhere. I don't know if you guys even care. But it's tracking that flu all over the place. And you can go by country and cases, and it is just a potpourri of all kinds of news. But basically, what I'm looking at here is, here's this wimpy-ass flu. All right, now we've had several deaths here in the New York City area the last couple of days. I think I heard a stat, like, what was it? Like, I think it was 16 out of 23 deaths were that had complicated conditions. And it's just getting to the point where I'm fed up. I am a fed-up reporter. Yeah, 16 out of 23 deaths had complicated conditions. So this is now at the point now where it's much more about how much can we attach to this thing, because they want the vaccine out. Now that they have it, WHO has it all pandemicked out, you got a situation where they're going to get what they want. But what we have is suspected cases of 6,500. We have confirmed cases of 45,000. Fatal cases, 340. All right, so out of 45,000 cases, less than 10% were fatal. It's just, I'm looking at the tracking of it. It seems to have some peaks and valleys here that if I were interested, I might correlate with the lunar cycles. Seems to peak every other week. And the cumulative, of course, has gone up from May 18th today, June 17th, as it's gone up. But the fatal count looks like it spiked around June 1st. There was a little spike there on Memorial Day. It's on the climb the last week or so. I just love these maps. It's amazing stuff. It's all over the U.S. here. It's outbreaking in China. You see that. And for some reason, let's see, if we go to the country map, let's go to the confirmed cases in the U.S., Flu tracker. It seems to have settled in the southwest corner of the country as it bleeds over from Mexico. But I thought it started more towards the Texas side of Mexico. But it's over there in Arizona, and it's all over the place, California and New Mexico. It's got a pocket up there in the northeast, and it's got a pocket up there in the northwest. So if you're in the flyover part of the country, you're pretty much safe. A couple little scales out there in Nebraska sniffling. But for the most part, the swine friend is a coastal virus, as it were. So there you go. I'm so sick of this thing. It's just nauseating how much coverage the flu's gotten. How about that? You know, and the other thing that that's really been in the news, I guess, last couple of days anyway, is this Letterman flap with Palin. Now, you know, I didn't see the joke live. I saw the apologies live, and we're an apology nation. Everybody loves to do stuff and then apologize, and then sometimes they don't apologize. We're going to get to Artie Lang here in a minute. Unapologetic Artie Lang. And what is this now? Is this live? Oh, it's Cal Ripken. I'm simulcasting the Met game as I watch here. We're tied 4-4 the last I looked. So anyway, Letterman goes out there, makes the joke, does a half apology, sort of like, you know, didn't know, wrong daughter, that kind of thing. That didn't fly. Then he goes and does a public apology, not so much for the joke, but for the fact that the public perception was wrong. And then he goes on the air the other night and takes the whole clean sweep approach, you know, because they have created a culture where you can have this sort of, you know, sort of media mob mentality that can create a you know, an advertising scare, things like that. Not that you're going to get Letterman to knuckle under, but it's just funny how no matter what he said, no matter what he did, it was going to be skewed and it was going to be interpreted the way that it was. And you know, I don't know if you have, but you guys, I watched it on Oberman the last couple of nights, the small gang of protesters that are out there trying to get him fired. What is the point? We've become like very kind of reactive in the way that we deal with these things politically and emotionally. And does that joke? I mean, it's bad taste. Okay, fine. But the guy's going to lose his job over it? I don't think so. I just don't think so. I mean, there's just too many things going on in the world, you know, for that to be a big deal. And to go even further into the absurdity, this Artie Lang Joe Buck thing the last couple of days. You been taking a look at that?
Mm-hmm.
As the host takes a sip of his brisk iced tea. Anyway, if you hadn't listened to it, I'll give you a sample of the reaction that took place as Oreo guy skies to deep center, making me a little nervous. That afterwards, Artie Lang's a comedian on the Howard Stern Show, of course, and you know, he's got a book out called "Too Fat to Fish." I mean, you know exactly what you're getting there if you're an eco, and you know it, hunk, because that's exactly what he is, and he that makes no apologies about it. So he goes on this show, and just completely just trashes the poor host, all right, who is an exo, who has no ability to roll with this guy in a live setting. And then he goes on a couple of shows on Sirius the next day to defend himself. So I'll give you a little sample of Artie Lang in the post-game show mode. Here you go.
That brought the house down. People were howling. And then I went into, I'm a Giants fan. I hate the Cowboys. I said, Michael Irvin owes my bookie money. He laughed like crazy. The place went nuts, and they knew what they were getting.
Well, Vic, Artie, people in those kind of audiences, they laugh because they're supposed to laugh. You think they laugh because it was funny, or they laugh because they felt they had to laugh?
Kristen, how come they weren't laughing at anybody else? Nobody else was getting laughs except me. I had to save the fucking show.
Well,
they're not supposed to laugh.
How come when we contacted HBO today, Artie, and I did, how come they told me that we told Artie, direct quote, if the energy level is low, pick up the energy level. They didn't say go nuts. They said pick up the energy level. That's a big difference between going nuts.
Okay, you know what? Chris, let me tell you something about show business. Every once in a while, they bullshit you, and they're bullshitting you. Ross Greenberg said to me, you go nuts, you go crazy if they're boring. People bullshit in this business, Chris. I hate to break it.
So in other words, Ross Greenberg, now, he's going to allow, he wants you to go on that show, Artie, to bury Joe Buck. That's what you did.
No.
He wants you to go on there to bury Joe Buck.
No. Let me tell you something, Chris. No, they wanted me on that show because I'm provocative and interesting and controversial. He knows exactly what I do. He knows I gamble on sports. He knows I have an edge to me. And he wants me to be the guy to play that role. Joe Buck comes off as this smug guy. And you know what? Joe Buck's a smart guy. I have to say, I do Conan O'Brien all the time. I do Letterman all the time. They have the same rapport with me. They play the smart guy. I say something obnoxious. They go back at me. And it's great. You know why? Because they're a million times funnier than Joe fucking Buck. So Joe has this attitude like, okay, I'm the smug guy. Arnie's a construction worker. And I played the game. And because it's on HBO, I cursed. People guffawed laughing. They don't laugh. They laugh politely if they have to. People were battled over laughter. Watch the fucking thing.
Arnie, I'm a big fan. You are not funny.
And I'm
sorry. Yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of yours, Artie.
Hey,
I
you
watched. You were not funny. That was not a funny set. That was not a funny 8 minutes.
I'll tell you what, Chris. I'm a big fan of yours about sports, but you don't know shit about being funny.
I could get the idea of what Artie was up to over there. And, you know, again, this is the point. We're getting to the point in the culture where we're so far beyond the that proverbial fourth wall, that everything is behind the scenes, even this kind of stuff. So, well, it's a great segue to our guest, who was probably a little confused. We'll get him on the air here as soon as I can find the horn. There it is. All right. So maybe you can explain this to us, our guest, Dr. Sung Lee, from BR Consulting out in Arizona. Why has society become so self-obsessed with almost like a high school mentality of what's appropriate, all that political stuff. When you see things like the Palin Letterman flap, and you see what happened the other night with Artie and Joe Buck, why are we even interested in this stuff anymore?
You know what? I'm not sure I know what the question is.
Well, there's someone who studies the cross-cultural brain, and someone who studies how a brain develops its social affect. Is there a, because of the mass media influence on brain development, we've discussed this on the show in the past, we grow up in an age now where almost all media is interactive. You know, I was born in 1964, the television talked at me, the radio talked at me, the telephone, I guess, was dial-up, but it wasn't nearly as invasive part of culture as it is now. Well, now you've got so much social media coming at you that's interactive, that wants your opinion, that makes your opinion matter. You can tweet all day long. When you see things that happen in the culture, like this, it's almost as if we're living in a constant state of protest, where almost everything sets off somebody and creates little media swirls that become big deals, like what happened with Letterman's joke last week about Sarah Palin's daughter. Do you think that's a function of technology, or do you think it's a function of a brain that's been immersed in this interactive media for a generation?
Well, you're raising some interesting questions, and I think that there's an interaction between those, and definitely the use of technology will affect the way our brain functions, and then that brain functioning will in turn be most adapted to or seek out certain kinds of technologies. So I think you're quite right that these things are linked, and they can reinforce each other.
And how do you feel that's affecting people individually when you have a culture like what the uprising in Iran, where they're cutting off cell phones and they're restricting internet access and they're trying to deny people access to things like Twitter? When you have people, it's almost like you can't go backwards and tell them that stuff doesn't exist and cut them off from the world. How do you think that affects people individually when they feel the need to sort of narrate their day on this digital landscape? Is that something that's beneficial, or is it something that becomes a little overwhelming at a certain point?
You know, actually, these are very interesting questions. And, you know, we're living in very interesting times. And the way I see it is we're all these different societies across the world, we're in sort of different stages of historical growth, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly they can be exposed to a technology that's, you know, it's almost like it may as well have come from outer space. And
mm-hmm.
and it's not really organically connected to the way people were interacting before that technology arrived. And so there can be, you know, real disconnect between the existing social structures and cultural norms and the sudden, you know, new technology that gets introduced. And I think, you know, it really is, it has the potential to both be very positive because, you know, suddenly, you know, this kind of new technology can help expedite, you know, growth and development in positive ways. But on the other hand, you know, if people get a taste for something, then it's suddenly taken away, and then it just can become a, you know, a fuel for a fire of all kinds of you know, sort of social, you know, sort of challenges.
Mm-hmm. And again, this is an era that we've seen a lot of focus on brain development in terms of delays that have come into the culture from a variety of sources, you know, that people have been discussing. And I'm just concerned that as this progresses, as this sort of undertow continues to build, as we keep expanding the landscape of different ways to communicate like this, that you have a bunch of dysfunctional and, you know, sort of poorly socially developed brains all getting their influence from other than people. They're getting influence from all sorts of media that isn't completely... that's the word. They're not really concerned with their well-being, so to speak. You're filling a lot of people's heads with a lot of weird ideas that aren't really equipped to filter those ideas. And yeah, I study memetics a lot, memetic science, and how ideas spread from brain to brain. And when you see something like this, where the cultures are becoming closer together, do you feel like this is going to cause more antisocial behavior or more pro-social behavior as it sort of keeps cresting like this?
You know what? Again, great questions. I mean, this is not a good conversation.
This is summer time. We get to bat these around for an hour a week.
Excellent. It's excellent. And, you know, I think that it really, things could go in any direction depending on, you know, what kind of wisdom we follow collectively. And I would actually both acknowledge your point, but even take it one step further and say that, look, you know, all this media exposure, all this external information, is that a distortion of normal human interaction? Yes, I agree with you. But again, I'm going to take it even one step further, that even, you know, the social interaction itself is of not the highest quality possible, because people are so disconnected from their own individual bodies. So the only information that they can trust is just, you know, like you said, the latest, you know, whatever Twitter feed or what have you, and they don't even know how they're feeling or why they're feeling that way. They can't tell if, you know, some pain is because of this, that, or the other thing, or whatever. I mean, they just don't have any sense of this connection between their own brain, mind, and body.
And again, because they grow up with the technology being sort of like a second skin, where they're growing up and, you know, by the time they're 10 or 11 years old, they're texting all day long, and they're living in this very sort of non-local universe. How do they find their feet? I mean, I know your work, your research has been much more about sort of connecting the low-tech and more of the kinesthetic literacy with this highly visual, highly verbal world. So give us an idea of what the best system that, I guess, the other Dr. Lee initiated. I can never pronounce his name right, even though I try hard. Maybe you could do that for me. And how do you think that will travel through an audience that is so conditioned to be entertained and stimulated and sort of, you know, almost to the point where they're intoxicated by information, where this is more grounding, more centering, and more about getting back into a natural rhythm? So give us a little bit about what the best system is and what your research is about.
Sure. Thanks for asking. So Mr. L.G. Lee, he is an inventor of a method which is called Brain Education System Training, the acronym BEST, just as you said. And this is exactly what you described it as, a way to really help people to ground themselves. And it's a simple kind of, you can think of it as five steps toward really just recovering your mastery over your own life. And so the first step, the first idea here is sensitizing. And this kind of goes back to what I had alluded to earlier, just this notion that you have to be connected to your body. You have to have some basic sensory awareness. You know, the old, you know, kind of question you ask somebody, look, geez, you know, haven't you come to your senses? You know, and that's, you know, we think of that as just some kind of, you know, metaphor or something, but that really should be taken quite literally. You know, do you have your senses? Can you actually, you know, feel your body? Can you get a sense of a situation, right? And without having to require this cognitive input of, you know, how, you know, some other external source of information, right? So this first step is just to really be able to have your senses. So then the second step is what we call versatilizing. So this is being able to act flexibly in body, mind, and emotion. So not to get stuck in ruts or habits or, you know, instantaneous prejudgments and so forth, but just to, again, have flexibility in your physical, emotional, and mental bodies, if you will. And of course, all of that goes back to the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Then thirdly, this idea is for refreshing. And the notion here is that we carry a lot of memories, many of which don't necessarily serve us. Many people have been, you know, exposed to trauma or abuse or what have you, or just, you know, ridiculous educational systems. I mean, you know, the list goes on. And a lot of these memories then really don't serve us for, you know, whatever needs we have at hand. So the idea of the refreshing is being able to release these memories which don't serve us and just be able to, you know, work with the information at hand. Then the fourth step is integrating. In some ways, I think this is the most fascinating step and really one of Mr. Lee's biggest innovations. So if you go back to, you know, some theories about brain structure, and you, there's a neuroscientist who was by the name of Paul McLean, who had developed the theory of the brain as a triune organ. So it has three evolutionary layers, this reptilian brainstem and this limbic system from the old mammalian heritage, and then this new brain associated with, you know, primates and other higher mammals. And so these three layers, you know, they have a tendency to kind of do their own thing, but really you want to be able to integrate them, you know, integrate all of your brainstem and the way it manages your basic body functions, your emotions, and not be controlled by your emotions, but, again, allow them to be at your service. And then this higher neocortex, which is for planning, decision-making, higher integration of functions, let that, you know, be the proper master of all of these functions. But really, you know, to integrate these three layers of the brain. And then finally, fifthly, this mastering step, you know, once you've done these other four things, you know, sensitizing, versatilizing, refreshing, integrating, then you can truly become the master of your life. And if you haven't done some of these kind of things for yourself, then if you think you're the master, chances are as good as not that you're actually just acting out some old habit of your own, or you're just acting out somebody else's agenda, even though you think you aren't. I mean, it's a kind of a false consciousness that people have.
Well,
so,
this is gets into some of the stuff we talk about here, where we get into the primal emotions like fear. And I don't know if you can turn your volume up a little bit. I'm a little trouble hearing you, but I always get with, especially with clients I work with here locally, is that I always say break it down. Look, there's only two fears. One is losing control, and the other is realizing you didn't have it in the first place. And when it comes to brain function, I always say a lot of times people don't realize it, their brain is being run by so many other outside sources that when they try to steer their mind towards these concepts that you're talking about, they find, wait a minute, I have this, you know, sort of somebody else is running the show in here, and I have a hard time breaking my habits and getting out of that sort of artificial rhythm I've been put in,
right,
you know, by work or whatever, and the natural rhythm is something I lost. So how do they get back? What would be the first step they do to get in touch with this thing so it's not such a foreign concept for them? Because I just find just having people stand still and closing their eyes is sometimes a micro-traumatic experience that they realize, look at all the background muscle activities going on in my body. I'm not even aware of it between blinks.
Right.
So how do you get them to just say, okay, well, the things you're talking about are, you know, they could dedicate their entire life to one of those four things, and maybe they'll, you know, they'll make a headway at it. But we have a whole culture that's, if they're not addicted to illegal drugs, they're addicted to over-the-counter drugs, or they're addicted to the foods they eat, or the TV shows they watch, or whatever. So how do you get these brains that are so hopped up to pull over and check the map?
Yeah, you're totally correct. I mean, I think you're right on so many of those notes. And, you know, just as you said, actually, Mr. Lee did, in fact, invent all kinds of methods to go through all those kinds of steps. But I think, you know, he really realized that in this day and age, people need simplicity. They just can't handle more than just, you know, just the most simple, basic thing. And that's not in some kind of an insult or whatever. It's just that we all need simplicity. And so his many other earlier developments were a little more developed, if you will. But his latest iteration is a method which he calls brainwave vibration, and that's a simple method of just, you know, letting your head kind of shake back and forth, and let your head just get into this spontaneous rhythm of movement, and then soon, you know, your whole body might start moving, and you're just kind of doing this whole sort of shaking and vibration thing, and just letting your whole body just kind of shake out you know, whatever kind of stuck thing it might be into. It's, you know, he's described this in a little book of his called Brainwave Vibration, and it's totally simple. It's, you know, basically what I just described, just allowing your head to vibrate back and forth.
Now, how do people, I mean, that sounds like, it is, I've seen the videos of it, it is very simple. How do you get people to understand that something that basic has such a deep and lasting benefit when it seems like something that would be done almost as a fidget, almost as something that would be done that they would give you drugs for if you did it, you know, involuntarily?
Right. You know, that's a good question, and I guess I'm not yet a good marketer.
No, okay. Because, I look how long it took we're dealing with a lot of concepts that are cross-cultural. You know, when Deepak Chopra brought over a lot of the Ayurvedic stuff, he left out the drinking of the urine part, you know, because he knew that the culture would run away from him with their hair on fire. But he says, you know, okay, meditation, colonics, eat some stuff, okay, don't take your drugs. Okay, Deepak, you can sit and tell us things for the next 30 years. Wayne Dyer brought over a lot of the meditation principles that were dealing with things that were coming from a psycho-spiritual dimension with erroneous zones and dealing with the deeper issues of that preceded all of the research on emotional intelligence and things like that back in the 70s. And even in the last 10 or 15 years, you've seen, you know, just the kind of a blurry line between what's grounded in neurobiology and what is way up in the trees. And you've seen, you know, I mean, I go back, you know, to Aquarian Conspiracy and Marilyn Ferguson and people like James Redfield with, you know, the 10 Insights and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just been sad to see, you know, some of these things come in and excite people and get people thinking and get people expanding their minds, and then there's nothing underneath the icing of the cake. It's extremely, you know, kind of like, oh, okay, we get to chase our states and quantum this and quantum that, but then the secret comes out and the bleep comes out. And when you see the really good neuroscience that's out there that's describing these lofty sort of technicolor processes that go on, it just seems like people want the sizzle and not the steak. Because to tell you the truth, even though the steak is nourishing and the steak will last and you can sort of build a brain by doing these things like you're talking about, it's not as exciting, it's not as stimulating as putting on, you know, the video games and going into that hyper mode. So how do you get a culture that is results-oriented, extremely interested in immediate results, to do something as simple as just let their head slowly shake back and forth until their body relaxes, unless you're going to have like one of those chi machines do it for them?
Mm-hmm.
It just seems like they don't want to take the wheel on some of these things. You know, look how long it took. Like Tai Chi still is sort of in little pockets of the culture.
Mm-hmm.
Yoga and Pilates took a long time to get their niche going. So how does Dr. Lee get his programs introduced? Does he go through the school systems? Does he go through adult education programs? How does he popularize his methods?
You know, I think that he's a very sort of practical and an atheoretical kind of guy, and he just tries things, and if it works, he'll go for it. If it doesn't work, he won't give any more attention. And I think, you know, you're correct that, you know, people don't necessarily have a first impulse to reach out for something as simple as a method I describe. But, you know, I think the culture is shifting also, and I think sometimes, you know, certain combination of events and people's awakenings, you know, things can shift quickly sometimes, you know, kind of the whole tipping point idea. And so, you know, there could be a tipping point where people are really asking for, look, we're tired of our addictions, as you so well described, let's get back to the basics. And so, we have to kind of be ready for when that happens and yet actively promote it at the same time.
It just doesn't seem, like I said, it just seems like we're such a reactive culture that the idea of being proactive or being sort of co-creative with this and making it part of the physical education of a developing child, putting it into the special needs programs and the gifted programs, so that there's a balance between, and this is something, I don't know if it's unique to just Western education, where they physically and literally divide up the way they educate the mind and where they educate the body. You have a PE class, run around, kill each other, and then sit still and shut up. And that's basically the way they educate a developing brain in this culture, where in other cultures, I mean, I always get, you know, kind of like a little bit, no, I said depressed, but I get a little bit kind of like, why can't it be this simple? Homogeneous cultures like Japan, you know, some of the smaller cultures, everybody gets up and does their morning exercises together, right, in the little town square there, as a group. I mean, the workers get up and do their Tai Chi as a group. There's a sense of this is part of the day. It isn't something unusual that you do on a Thursday afternoon on your way home before you pick up your dry cleaning. It's part of the day. And we're such a boutique culture. Everything has a little fad. Everything has a little, you know, we try everything on like a little hat, and we go, oh, that was cute. And we, we sort of miss the boat. And so what happens is that you get a little car wash, and you go, okay, well, you know, I did meditation once at the airport, and it seemed to help. But there's never a coupling of life as we live it and life as it really exists. It seems like it all takes place in an IMAX theater that we can go watch some nature movie. But other cultures who don't have this, sort of crutch of all this artificial noise around them, they take to it, and it's like you don't see near the panic about things. Like we were just talking about the swine flu before you got in the air. There is a daily beating of the head of everybody that drops dead in this country. There's almost a report before the body is called that the swine friend was there. H1N1, here's another one, bag them and burn them. And they sit, and they're, I don't know if they're trying to tell people that when the vaccine comes out, it's going to protect you. And they don't give anybody any proactive information about what an immune system is, how it develops, how do you support it. This is a virus. It runs its course. It's only going to find receptive hosts that are already dealing with other mitigating factors. That's why I was just saying the stat in New York was 16 out of 23 had severe underlying health conditions that led to their death. And it's almost as if that part of the story is, it's three paragraphs below the headline, and all you get is a lot of fear. And again, that's one of those things, like I said before, loss of control, or realizing you never had it in the first place.
Yeah.
And between that sort of overarching theme and the fact that every time there's a health problem, the solution is always a drug and a vaccine, nothing from the inside, I just think it's a learned helplessness. And then when you give a solution like sit still, shake your head slowly side to side until your whole body relaxes, and that will renew your connection to what's outside the culture, what's universal, and over time give you something that's portable for the rest of your life, no matter what's going on, because things are going to happen to you, it's inevitable, that you can recover, you can respond, that you have some integrity within you that you can tap into. So what's some of the other techniques in the BEST program people might not be familiar with?
Right, beautifully spoke, by the way. I mean, you really said that beautifully. Thank you very much.
No problem.
Yeah, sure. So what other kinds of methods? You know, there are so many, and, you know, let me just share one simple thing, laughter and smiling and the healing power of positive emotions. And, you know, one of the nice things about laughter is that you don't have to have a reason to laugh, by the way, right? So you can just go ahead and laugh, create the laughter, and you can still feel the positive benefits.
So what's that country? Is it India that they have those laughing circles in the morning? They all get together and laugh like hyenas?
I think that probably it's a good part of the culture there, but you know what? I think there are more and more places all around that are doing that.
Yeah, I know there's some in Connecticut here that do it. Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, and again, it's part of using natural ways of expressing yourself without having to have the experience first. You know, we're only going to be happy when we get results around here, and process is something that's icky and kind of like, you know, kind of gray, and we don't like process. Ooh, that we don't know how it's going to turn out. We don't want to do it because, God forbid, we invest in it for 5 minutes and we don't get the result we want. We kind of shake it like a, you know, like a slot machine. It didn't give us what we wanted. I'm pretty down on the culture tonight, but something like this, like what Dr. Lee's developed, when you say brain education, people think cognitive. And you know, here in Soma Time, of course, cognitive is something that to me is a derivative of experiential learning, which is something that we all do growing up to test the boundaries of the environment, to test our own limits, you know, you little kids will race each other, not because they're trying to beat them competitively, just because they want to be able to compare themselves to other people and test their limits. How fast can I go? How high can I climb? And it isn't about limits in terms of some external standard of you're good, you're bad. It's just that I want to go a little further. And everything I've ever read, everything I've ever experienced when it comes to outside this culture's types of mindfulness or contemplative disciplines, it's constantly about getting outside of your comfort zone and getting outside of your known world so that you can adapt and be more flexible to what happens within that world. And what happens to me, most people around here are so educated to sort of cleave off, protect their weak spots, and sort of defend their turf that they don't expand. And then when they get to be in their 20s and 30s and life starts to take them outside themselves, whether it's their job or raising a family or whatever, they're scrambling for the drugstore to try to suppress all those emotions. So
right.
How does the best program work on a longitudinal level, working with children, working with teenagers, working with young adults, and then working with adults and seniors?
Sure, that's great. Thanks again for asking. Well, you know, there are different sort of implementations, if you will, of these kinds of principles and that kind of, you know, five-step framework for different kinds of populations. And in the schools, for example, in New York City and environs, there are several different schools in the elementary and middle school level which are using something called brain education for enhanced learning. And so kids, it actually goes back to what you were saying earlier, you know, gee, why do we separate this cognitive and physical learning? And this is a program which very much integrates them because the brain, of course, is the basis for all learning. It doesn't make these arbitrary distinctions between cognitive and physical. And so this is a program that really introduces children to their brain and, you know, the physical aspects of it as a material organ and as a way to actually manage the physical body. And they learn about how the brain is connected to different organs and the functioning of different organs. They learn about their emotions and how to be aware of their emotions, how they can even create their emotions. They learn about self-efficacy and about how if they trust their brain, they can actually do things, okay? So they push themselves to do push-ups, and they really, you know, train themselves in different kinds of ways, both physically, again, emotionally, cognitively. And so at the end of the day, then, what we see with these folks, and we had actually done a little pilot project in Detroit, with a handful of fourth graders a few years ago, and we found significantly increased levels of self-efficacy among the kids that had gone through that program. And, you know, if you want to talk in terms of, you know, cognitive psychology and all that kind of thing, self-efficacy is one of the most important constructs because it's all about having that, you know, that inner sort of confidence of I can do this. Look, whatever happens on the outside, I can do this. I can find a way, right? I can find a solution. So that's something that's been happening at the you know, younger child level. And then just going to give you one more example. For elders, there was a book written. Mr. Lee wrote a book with Professor Jesse Jones of California State University, and that book is called In Full Bloom, A Brain Education Guide for Successful Aging. And
okay.
That integrates a lot of the kinds of different kinds of exercises similar to Tai Chi and other kinds of, you know, movement exercises to get your circulation going, and then also a lot of information about, again, how to maintain a positive and healthy lifestyle and kind of, again, just more of these kinds of steps and exercises, but more for a senior population.
Well, again, this is one of those things where there's so many directions you can go with it because it's so necessary in people's lives to understand behavior, understand relationships, understand healing, performance. There's a lot of different dimensions you can go in with this stuff. I just see it right now as being used so sparingly and so almost, like I said, almost like wood filler, where you're not getting, you know, these kinds of programs should be done regionally, nationally, not, you know, here and there, pilot program. I don't see why is it so hard to convince people, especially the ones that know better, that this is something that's going to pay dividends for them immediately, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, because if you get kids, especially little kids, used to this kind of stuff, that becomes the standard rather than all the things that have become the standard without that stuff there. So do you guys have government-based programs, military-based programs?
that are going to get, you know, a little more to the people that make decisions that would implement these things, or are you still trying to work more grassroots?
You know what? It goes both directions, and boy, you're asking all these great questions. And actually, in Korea, where Mr. Lee hails from, South Korea, they have done really both of those kinds of approaches. You know, both the grassroots and top-down kind of sort of organizations, and they have in fact actually worked with the Korean military and with the Korean Ministry of Education and as school districts at the city level. And so there's a lot of work in South Korea about the value of brain education, and I think that people there have really resonated with that notion. And you know, I think that it does resonate all around the world, and in the developed countries, I think that, you know, maybe part of the burden is really letting people see how this is kind of can be a unifying construct. I mean, when you begin to introduce this to some people, they have their own filters. Oh, I saw this before, and I called it X, right? And it's something they learned, you know, 5 years ago or 30 years ago or what have you, during the 60s or what have you. And partly that's probably true, but I don't think, and, you know, I've done a little bit of homework around this, that I've seen anything that really comprehensively and systematically puts together these different kinds of sort of methods and approaches to human betterment. I mean, like that five-step method, it really kind of hits all the major nails on the head, in my opinion. And so, you know, but I think you're quite right. You know, it's got to be done from all levels, grassroots, talk to, you know, higher-level administrators and so forth.
Yeah, the other thing is that What gets me is that, especially from my clinical background, is the obsession with technology, the obsession with the objective evidence that says this is working, whether it's, you know, case studies, whether it's research, whether it's using things that study EEG. Do you guys ever encounter a lot of that? Oh, it's just anecdotal, it's just a bunch of stories, and they dismiss it, or are you getting more of the proof in the pudding kind of a reaction from people?
Sure. It's really more of the former, because, we live in a society where you have to sort of, you know, show your return on investment and, you know, show your performance and outcomes and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in fairness, I don't think that's unreasonable, you know, because we do want to be able to just go beyond the rhetoric, if you will, and show that, one kind of a way to approach something actually will give you more bang for the buck. You know, I mean, everybody's learning nowadays that you've got to be efficient and productive and economize, and you've got to, you know, if you're not providing something that's very high value for the investment, then you better get out of the way, right? So I don't think that that's that unreasonable to ask for, you know, these kinds of objective studies.
Well, again, I don't, the funding isn't usually there. I know in my old field of origin, chiropractic, I mean, the collective research pool was about $224 million, I think. This is about 15 different schools trying to divide up that money, and they just couldn't get anything done. And the thing is that, you know, to get your hands on that kind of grant money, things like that, is so rare. And again, because they always direct it toward conditions and diseases and dysfunctions,
right,
and syndromes and,
right,
you know, things like the swine flu, you end up doing a lot of things that are sort of terra cognita. Low back pain, oh great, you know, oh headaches, great. But what you're talking about is developmental stuff, things that are more on the side of what's known as salutogenesis, which is the origin of well-being, rather than pathogenesis, the origin of the disease. So even if you had the money, and I don't know, you guys might have access to more than most because of the fact that you're working with different countries. How do you take that asset, how do you take that resource and use it properly so that you don't just develop a bunch of things that nobody can really leverage to get the next step then, which, okay, now look, we did our methods, it's shown an effect, can we now please teach you this thing before your brain rots in your head? You know, so it just seems to take so long. While that's going on, three or four more drugs are out there poisoning people, and it just seems like we're chasing our tail here. I'm of the opinion now where I think science has gotten so politicized and so economically driven and so provincial that it really isn't true science anymore. It's much, much more marketing. It's much, much more of a sales process than it is, you know, what people would look at as laboratory-based research. It's all sponsored by and lobbied by some of the best-funded research is done by drug companies. So how do you get this low-tech, extremely tangible, extremely transferable art form that, Dr. Lee's developed outside of the clutches of the political science economic little triangle?
Yeah, boy, but you're just cutting to all these great questions again. And, you know, I think Mr. Lee would really agree with you that I think he would also say that, you know, you just can't wait around for these, you know, 1,000-patient clinical trials, you know, multi-million-dollar blah, blah. I mean, that's ridiculous, I mean, especially for something as simple as this. You know what, actually? He has a more proactive solution than what I've offered to you so far.
Okay.
What he has actually created is his latest attempt to get this out to people is he's sponsoring a brain art festival, which is going to take place at Radio City Music Hall this, I believe, August.
Really?
Yeah, and so this is a way to, look, you know, don't sit around waiting for the scientists to vet something for you. Go ahead and experience this and, you know, get into it. And so this is going to be a big event, Radio City Music Hall. I wish I could tell you the date, but I'm sure that people go to ilchilee.com, they can find it.
Yeah, that's ilchilee.com, you guys, if
correct.
You're scrambling
yeah.
for a pen there.
Yeah, and so...
And okay, so that's great. So he's already... See, what I was going to suggest is the only other wall that hasn't been tapped, which has become a little bit abused lately, is the spiritual direction, because the religious community loves this brain stuff. Have you seen the neurotheology research and things about... Larry Dossey's made a second career out of writing about spirituality and healing and all the communal prayer research that's been out. It's just funny. It just strikes me very funny how the scientists and the spiritualists have become sort of teammates, and then you have the political economic factors. And what you're bringing in is I've worked a lot with creative people myself, musicians, artists, people like that, and they have the best, most eclectic brains to work with anyway because they're constantly in a creative mode. So
right.
you get that part of them to come out and really what this is about is self-expression.
Yeah.
And if people understood that, whether it's dancing, music, writing, anything you got, you're giving your the inside world and the outside world a place to resonate, and that's what I like about what you guys are doing. And so this is coming up in August here in New York City itself. So will Dr. Lee be here for that?
Yes, Mr. Lee will be there for that.
Okay. Well, that's cool. So it's going to be like a whole weekend or a couple of days or what?
I believe it's a one-day event.
All right. Well, hey, you got to start somewhere. I mean, if you guys had that if you think about it, you probably, in terms of education, if you got into the creative arts with this, with music therapists and people like that, that are dealing with, you know, right brain, left brain kind of stuff, because it takes both sides of the brain to get this stuff done. We had some people on last week that deal with this in terms of behavioral disorders and dealing with right and left brain function. To me, those are the two biggest untapped areas, is art and athletics, because those are the areas where you get back in the body.
Right.
And they don't have to prove themselves and go through the research trials that you get through clinical conditions and dealing with things that are aberrant. So this is... This has a lot of potential. The other thing I wanted to ask you about was if you're dealing with children, and there's millions of them out there that need this kind of work, and you're dealing with seniors, and there's just nursing homes teeming with them, who can't physically perform the exercises, who have difficulty, you know, following directions, who can't work well in groups. How does Dr. Lee address those people?
You know what? I think one of the nice aspects of that, let's just stick with the brainwave vibration method for about that one, is that even people who are quite, you know, relatively limited in their capacities can still do something. And I recall an anecdote from someone who had a daughter with congenital neurological syndrome. I believe Rett syndrome, if I'm not mistaken, but she was essentially wheelchair bound, and probably still is. Her mother was actually just doing these little movements actually for for her. So very gently, just, you know, moving her head a little bit back and forth. And she was, said that she was just astonished after, I don't know how long she did it for, a few weeks or so, something maybe. But just at her level of interactions with her and her, some of her cognitive functioning just seemed to really just make this step up. And so, you know, again, something that, you know, even if you can't do anything yourself, someone could gently help you to do that.
And I've seen this happen with Tai Chi when people have, you know, a recovering from an illness, recovering from, you know, a knee injury, something like that, and they just sit and watch a video of people doing Tai Chi for half an hour, and they get a relaxation benefit, and they,
right.
Yeah. So there's other aspects of the social brain that we're not completely able to put into words yet. I just wish that we can get this from going to the movies. We have a collective experience as an audience. We get this sometimes, you know, when we go to sporting events. We have people talk about that. But for some reason, when it comes to actually working on things that are much more mundane, much more ordinary, like being able to sleep, being able to recover from injuries, again, you get back to the it's not snazzy enough. There's not enough bells and whistles here. The only time we like no frills is when we're flying Southwest Airlines. The rest of the time, we want frills.
Right.
You know, so I'm just, I guess I get a little frustrated because the stuff that I do in the somatic world is much, much more about being extremely good at the basics and being good at basic sensory motor coupling activities, being able to move the eyes before you move the head, things that might make you more efficient in the way that you function. But they're not supposed to be snazzy. That's why they're basic.
Right.
It's like I want to play, you know. That's why I think it's funny how the Guitar Hero game has taken off, but the number of people learning how to play guitar has pretty much stayed the same. You know, and in fact, if you talk to musicians, and I do, it's difficult for them to fake playing the guitar than it is to actually play the guitar for real. Because playing the guitar for real, you have real feedback. When you're faking, you can do whatever you want. And that's, you know, I think that's what the culture does, especially when it comes to brain education, is that they'll substitute, you know, video games and other things, more cognitive stuff, for actual whole body, whole brain, environmental learning. And I don't know how to get the awareness through to people that are immersed in those types of activities until they crash, until they're in a rehab center, until they're in a recovery situation, or until they go through several losses in their life, and they're sitting still long enough to get them to listen. So I commend you guys for you know, for slogging away at this stuff, because it's how long has the best system been incarnate in its entirety? I know he's been doing his research for 20 or 30 years, but how long has the best system been available for people to learn from?
Right. Yeah, just as you say, he's been working on this for, I would say, the better part of 30 years in one version or another. He's systematized it as the brain education system training. I would say that probably goes back to about, maybe 5 or 6 years now.
Okay. All right. So then post-decade of the brain, you have this, and again, I don't know if you guys have tapped into things like people coming back from Iraq, or people dealing with the transition from like things like Katrina. You know, that population of people that have been through a real, you know, prolonged post-traumatic stress disorder, and especially now dealing with the economic fallout, people that have been displaced. That, to me, it's like if this stuff got in the hands of Red Cross workers, rescue workers, people that are dealing with first responders. One of the people that we talked to a while ago dealt with EMS workers with the verbal first aid. Were you using conversation as biofeedback? Were you using, you know, your breathing pattern as a way to communicate, you know, that you're secure? Those are the things to me that are more powerful than anything the Merck Labs can come up with. They could stick on the shelves. And then you don't have a whole population of teenagers, you know, sucking Sudafed to get through the day. So I hope you guys are looking at that same angle too. That I just feel there's a whole population of people that have been displaced and been through trauma, and then the rescue workers that are working with them every day. That's a much more sedate environment to bring these kinds of things into, you know, and as well as the ones you discussed before. So
It's amazing. You guys have been doing this 4 or 5 years, and it sounds like you've been, you know, making some inroads in different areas. But let's kind of circle around just to kind of sum up here. What do you think is the number one misconception about the brain first, and then the number one misconception about your work?
Wow. Okay. Big question. So number one misconception about the brain. I think the number one misconception about the brain is that it's all about cognitive intelligence.
Right.
Yeah. You know, people think, that guy's the brain of the class because, you know, he's so clever, he gets the good grades, he can solve the math problems. And there's no question, of course, that the brain is responsible for, you know, that kind of cognitive processing. And there's no question that that kind of cognitive processing is valuable. But that is one aspect of the brain, one aspect of our humanity, for that matter. I think Howard Gardner created a wonderful revolution in education by saying that there are multiple intelligences, the kinesthetic, the musical, the athletic, the spatial awareness, so on and so forth. And really just, you know, hammered home the point that, look, there are many components to our humanity, to our brain, and we should really aim to develop and respect them all so that we really allow human beings to flourish to their fullest capacity. So I would say that is the number one misconception about the brain. In terms of the number one misconception about the work of Mr. Ilchi Lee, well, you know what? Gosh, I guess it depends on who one would talk to. I think that, you know, to the degree that anyone knows about him, probably they think that he's just kind of on some kind of quixotic, or even self-aggrandizing journey, because, you know, many of the things that he's done just have very grand aims attached to them. And so maybe the misconception is that he's just some kind of, just crazy person, if you will.
Yeah, I've seen some of the stuff on the internet, you know, cult leader. I'm like, what?
Right.
You know, it's again, anytime something that people have built an audience around, you know, they go right back to, oh, this must be Jim Jones. It's time for the Kool-Aid. I'm like, no, he's
right.
Telling you to relax. He's not telling you to do anything else.
That's exactly right.
Kind of comical to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually a bit tragic, too, because just going back to what we talked about earlier, you know, people get their information from, you know, the internet and just hearsay, and so they've already formed preconceptions without even knowing, you know, step one of what the guy's talking about. So I think that's probably the biggest unfortunate misconception about Mr. Lee's work.
Well, hopefully we can get him, you know, to get his message out through the channels that everyone respects, Oprah, things like that, and Larry King. You know, where there's an audience where they can make an objective decision about themselves. But so what's next for your research? You guys doing anything that we should know about?
Wow. So, I know that in New York they're just getting on to some the data analysis for the schools. They've been talking about doing some work with some kind of study for the brainwave vibration, just to sort of, you know, get a little more quantitative data on that. I myself actually have a practice in brainwave biofeedback, and we've been doing quite a bit here in Sedona, Arizona. So it's just a lot of new things going on. You know, people should check out Mr. Lee's work again, ilchilee.com. My work, I actually have again my own practice, and that's at in Sedona, Arizona, brainwellcenter.com. More than happy to, you know, share with folks about that at another date.
What was that? What was the name of that last website? Brain what?
Brain Well Center.
Brain Well Center. Okay.
Correct.
And you're in Sedona.
That's right.
Okay, I got Craig Janjulis is an old shaman friend of mine lives out there, so I'll put him on to you guys.
Oh, great.
Yeah, I got some clients that have some vacation home out there too that might be able to stop by and shake some waves with you guys. But thanks. Really, you've been a tremendous guest and wealth of information. So. Again, everybody out there, you know, if you haven't stumbled across this work, you can check our website for it. And anyone that has any questions or anything that they missed during the show, you can always email me at nakedsoma@gmail.com, and we'll get you what you need to make sure that you can become part of this this community that's really proactively not just changing themselves, but changing the way they relate to the world, which is changing the way other people can relate to the world. So hopefully this will this will continue to develop and travel, and I wish you guys good luck with it.
Thank you very much. It's been a delight. These are a wonderful series of questions and answers. I love it.
Yeah, thanks for joining us on Soma Time, and hopefully we'll have you on soon to discuss some of your own work.
Thank you.
All right, take care now.
Okay, you too.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
All right, so let's see. I'm sitting here trying to get to the switchboard. I'm getting the sound of the baseball game in the studio. Okay, he's gone. There you go. Wow. So anyway, we got one out and a guy on second. We're down by two. Now back to real life. Beltran's up. We're trying to tie the game. So let's go live to Baltimore. See if we can get us a couple of runs here before the show's over. Den, as we get back to being obsessed with... Lifts one to right field. Shallow. Two outs. Tying run. We got another shot. Yeah, here comes Dave Wright. Can he get a home run? Can this guy hit a home run and tie the game? That's what we're looking for here. This is an interesting situation here. David has hit a home run in about 2 weeks. We got a Philo at night. He's sitting 5'10 against lefties, I just said. Wow. He's 0 for 4. He's a tying run. We got nothing to lose because the Phillies already lost. So, got a couple of things to cover after this is over. So, hopefully, we can tie the game quick. And come on, David. That's it. One pitch, the game's over. Wow, he didn't even work the count. What the heck was that? That was like he was trying to get out of jail there quick. And the Mets lose. Ugh, oh, I feel horrible now. So drained. So, my brain is, oh, man, unbelievable. Anyway, that's that. So, a couple things I wanted to hit on before we signed off for this week, because we got a couple things to preview, is if you didn't catch it, the Twitter Nation had one of their first conferences in New York City called the 140 Characters Conference. Okay, it's 140conf.com. Exploring the disruptive nature of Twitter, 140 characters at a time. I think this is great. And there also was a sports blog conference last weekend called, what was it called? Blogs with Balls or something like that? Let me just double check. Yeah, if I got it right. Yeah. And it was another one of these things where you had a community of people that, you know, don't get to see each other, don't get out much. And there they were, Blogs with Balls. Talking about everyone that's blogging about sports. And it's like those are where the little micro worlds are that you're meeting people that are every day. They're out there. It's a very creative crowd of people. So I just think it's great that stuff's out there and people are interacting because, to me, even though they don't know it, even though if you told them, they stop in their tracks. They are developing their brains. They are extending themselves. And this is what I'm trying to get you to do anyway. So that's that. A couple of things before we kind of close up shop for the night. Father's Day coming up, and a couple of good books out there if you're looking for gifts. There's a book about Vin Scully called Pull Up a Chair. Looks like a good book if you have an old Dodger fan laying around that you want to give him a little baseball book for that. And the Jimmy Roberts book about overcoming slumps with golf. Another little tidbit book that might be one you want to toss to Papa Bear's library. So there you go, some gift ideas. And just to repeat, Dr. Sung Lee's website is brainwellcenter.com out there. If you're out there in Arizona, you want to stop by, check out what he's doing. Sounds like he's up to some good stuff. So there you go with that. Now, I had a couple things I wanted to do as I... Thanks at the airwaves here with the stinking loss, with the stinking, lousy, rotten, stinking Orioles. Ugh, the night that the Phillies lose to. Unbelievable. And our best reliever screws up. 6-4. We won last night 6-4. We lose tonight 6-4. And the Yankees lost. The Yankees lost to the freaking Nationals. So there you go. Let's see if I can find it. See, I'm tempted. I'm tempted to play this one. Let's see. Oh, boy, this is some funny stuff. I don't know. Let's see. If I could find the one I wanted. All right. We'll go there first. This is Mark doing absolutely nobody a favor here. YouTube got to come through for me here. That's all I say. We heard Artie Lang. Going to go to the other end of the comedy spectrum here with a little Bill Cosby to take us into some Father's Day stuff. And next week we're going to have Dr. Young on talking pH. Oh boy, I got some things to say about that. So check out blogsoma.net this weekend. Check out somaspace.org as I tinker away and tinker away. And of course, check me out here on the Blog Talk with more stuff. I did make a post on Blog Soma a couple days ago. If you're a sports fan, you might want to check that out. All right, let's see. Here we go. La-la-loo. This is a little Father's Day inside humor from Bill Cosby, and I will play us out with a little Billy Joel if I can find it. So, again, do you have any questions? NakedSoma@gmail.com. I'll be happy to answer them for you. And I think this is Bill, if it plays.
My father was a very, very bright man. He graduated from high school, and then he was kicked out of college for a number of things. But he was very, very proud to be what he was. He said some brilliant things in his life. But he confused me, because from age 1 to 7, because of my father, I thought my name was Jesus Christ. When I come in the living room and trip and fall, and he said, Jesus Christ, can't you walk? Bread and the water glass would be in your way, and he'd knock it over. Jesus Christ, clean the water up. So we moved from Stewart Street to the projects. And the kids in the neighborhood said, what's your name? And I said, Jesus Christ. Your name ain't no Jesus Christ. I said, yes, it is. Come on in my house. I brought 20 kids in the living room, man. My mother, Jesus Christ. And then from age 7 to 15, I thought my father was a psychologist. Because he looked at me and said, are you crazy?
There you go, Artie Lang. You got through all that without cursing once. All right, my man Billy to play us out. We will see you again here next week, 9 p.m. Eastern, for some more summertime. Until then, be yourself and be well. Travel light. Come on, Napster. Everything's slow. Opening media. Tick, 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 tick. From the album Street Life Serenade, the song The Entertainer. If it ever gets here, it's unbelievable. Oh, look at this. It's like watching paint dry. Yeah, we're opening the media. Try to play a song. Unbelievable. See, this is why we need more stillness. More like, you know, centeredness in the world. Because it just won't play. It's just going to sit there and sit there. But if I needed something to stop, then of course that would be the opposite effect. It won't stop. I'm stubborn. You archivers might just, you know, inch it forward a little bit till the song starts, but for all you poor bastards listening live, look at this thing. It's just sitting there.
rat bastard. Oh, God. I bet you I could probably find it on YouTube faster than... Oh, there it goes. So, sure. I threaten it with another social media and it responds. I don't think these things aren't intelligent and spiteful. They're no different than your relatives. Good night, Dad.
I'm the entertainer, and I know just where I stand. Another serenader, and another long-haired band. Today I am your champion, I may have won your heart. But I know the game, you forget my name, and I won't be here in another year if I don't stay on the chart. Ooh. I am the entertainer, and I've had to pay my price. Things I did not know at first, I learned by doing twice. Ah, but still they come to haunt me, still they want their say. So I learned to dance with a hand in my pants and above my neck, and I write them a check and they go their merry way.
Happy Father's Day!